Smooches. On this episode, we're recapping a YA romance by one of our favorite authors, Talia Hibbert. It's called Highly Suspicious and Unfairly Cute, and it's a friends to enemies to lovers romance about two high school seniors who join the same highly competitive wilderness enrichment scholarship program. We also talk about how most conspiracy theories have super fucked up roots, children's books that make grown women sob uncontrollably, and non-crunchy buttercream. Spoilers ahead. Hi, Meg.
Hey, Liz.
I am ferociously tired. How are you? Ferociously sleepy.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Well, your due date is pretty imminent, so I think that's to be understandable.
Yeah. So we skipped last week without an explanation. But that's basically the explanation. So we're a week behind schedule, but that's fine.
Podcasts are for fun. So
yeah.
I see no problem here. I didn't get any complaints. So I assume that our listeners are fine.
Yeah. And I was going to do a hey, sorry message. And then I was like, no, because I really want to try to not mess up the episode numbering this season with teasers and apology messages.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Also, I don't think an apology is necessary.
Yeah.
Personally.
It's fine.
It is fine.
It is fine.
Very much fine. But we're here. We're back.
We are. And we're talking about our fave Talia Hibbert and her YA debut, Highly Suspicious and Unfairly Cute.
As you know, YA is not typically my ministry, but I really liked this.
Yeah, I had a big YA phase as an adult, but it's been a while. And one of our episodes coming up soon is we're going to revisit some YA.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be...
I'm excited for that one.
Memory lane.
Yeah.
But this one, it's got Talia Hibbert's typical charm and humor. It just doesn't have the spice.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
It doesn't completely render the idea of sex non-existent.
That's true.
But I'm definitely, as an adult, less looking for that in... YA.
Because you find it disturbing.
Yes. So
yeah.
I love it for the kids. Age appropriate whatever that is, age appropriate depictions of sex for teenagers. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily want to read it.
Yeah, I think that's a very healthy attitude. I thought that sometimes I get a little frustrated when I'm reading YA because, and I know this is probably more in line with how I felt when I was in that age range, but mm-hmm. just everything being so heightened and mm-hmm. So dramatic. I get a little eye roll about it, but I didn't feel that way at all about this. I thought it was appropriate.
That's the part I like about YA.
Yeah.
Yeah. That everything is so intense because I like it. And that intensity, that emotional intensity kind of makes up for the lack of really big conflicts and high stakes and the sex. So.
Sure. I think that we had enough drama in their circumstances mm-hmm. that we didn't need this over the top emotional reaction.
Totally.
To stuff.
I just had a flash about Riverdale, which I only watched maybe two or three seasons of, and it was already very much falling off the rails. But that is a show with 20-somethings depicting teenagers, and they are just boning all over town.
Uh-huh.
In a way that it's the first The first relationship depicted in Riverdale is Archie and his music teacher.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's very much like, at least it goes in letting you know, like, this isn't how most teens act.
Nor should they.
Nor should they. So, okay, in this book, this is an enemies to lovers, but the enemies were formerly best friends.
Friends to enemies to lovers.
Friends to enemies to academic asterisk rivals, because it's not really an academic pursuit, but it's related to academics.
True.
But they're sort of competing against each other. And the main characters are Celine Bangura. She is a TikTok conspiracy theorist, but in a cute way.
Mm-hmm.
In a, like, aliens and is there and disproving, like, medical conspiracy theories, personal anecdotes kind of way. And Bradley Graham, who is football as in soccer.
Correct.
Football as in soccer star. Mm-hmm. And they are high school seniors. They used to be best friends, but about 4 years ago, they had a big falling out, which was caused by Bradley kind of becoming more popular and joining more groups, more social networks than Celine was, which is kind of trite to me. Like, I guess that, yeah, that does happen, but he really wanted to bring her into the fold and not leave her behind. Her perception was that he left her behind.
Right.
But the real nail in the coffin was him telling her, like, could you just, like, be less weird?
Like, tone it down
around
a little.
These people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she could not abide by that. Her weirdness, by the way, is kind of a coping mechanism because of the big wound in her life, which was her father leaving,
being a cunt,
being a cunt, leaving her family for his second family. And it was like an all at once thing. It wasn't like I'm leaving to start a new life. It's like I'm leaving because my mistress, oh, by the way, I got a mistress, is pregnant with twins. Right? It was twins. So it was a lot all at once, and Celine's family struggled financially, and her dad is like a big shot lawyer. So that comes into play with Celine's personal ambitions in a big way. And yeah.
She has an older sister, but they're very close. And the sister, it's a wound for her too, obviously, but she had some years on Celine when the thing happened. And she, toward the end of the book, really jumps in with some much needed perspective.
Yeah. Big sisters. They know what the fuck they're talking about. So
you saying that as the big sister.
Yes. Yes. And I deserve to say it. So so Celine kind of felt like, surely this wasn't her dad who did this. He must have been abducted by aliens and this is a pod person. So her interest in conspiracy theories either starts or becomes really intense with her trying to cope with understanding how this could happen to her.
Right.
And it coincides with Bradley's rise in popularity, and he has no problem with it. Like, it's great. It's Celine. It's just like what she's into now. But he doesn't want her to be made fun of. And he tells her to tone it down, and she responds in what I think is a way that makes her the worst half. Which is it's this and a few other things, but she tells him, like, well, are your new friends going to like you as much when they find out about your raging obsessive compulsive disorder?
Raging. Yeah.
And he wasn't managing it as well back then as he is now with medication and therapy and really, like, understanding why he does things and how to talk himself through these moments of needing to count or catastrophizing or medical anxiety. So they stop talking for like 4 years. The only time they talk is to insult each other.
Mm-hmm. But they're like weirdly obsessed with each other still.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're completely like, this is my nemesis. But like, in a way that it's like, wow, this person is your favorite topic. They're your special
Why
interest.
Why so obsessed with me? Mm-hmm. It's giving Never Have I Ever, Davey yes. and Ben.
Yes, it is. Oh, speaking of Never Have I Ever, did you see that Alicia Rye's Partners in Crime has been optioned by no. Mindy Kaling?
I had not seen that.
Mm-hmm. Partners in Crime cool. and... There's going to be a sequel, so.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to. I'm still waiting for Red, White, Royal Blue. So.
Yeah, when in the fuck is that coming out?
I don't know. I mean, I guess editing a movie takes a while, but they shot it so fast. And
they
did. It feels like it's been so long ago.
Yeah. So
maybe like a year ago at this point.
Yeah, no. I remember like the casting announcements, and then they were filming, and then the filming was done. It felt like in a week.
Mm-hmm.
And... Yeah, I can't wait to see it. But so there is this big opportunity with Celine's role model, like legal baddie, Catherine something or another. And Celine wants to go into corporate law. And she wants to go into corporate law so she can rub it in her corporate lawyer daddy's face.
But
how
she's
successful and smart she
better
is.
Than him.
Yeah. So obviously,
despite being corporate law not really being in her interests.
Like, yeah, she's very much more into like social justice aspects of the law.
Right.
So like as far from corporate law as you could get, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to participate in this enrichment program that is a two-part survival course in the woods. It takes place over 2 weeks over school breaks. And the people who have gone through the program have made amazing careers in whatever field they're interested in for themselves.
Right.
Half the people drop out or are kicked out throughout the program. And three people get selected for full scholarships for whatever mm-hmm. it is that they're going to study. So even if you don't get the scholarship, you get a ton of recognition and networking opportunities. And if you get the scholarship, obviously you're pretty much set for your collegiate career.
Right.
So this is what Celine is going to do. And she ends up accidentally presenting this opportunity to Bradley because mm-hmm. They are snooping outside of a class hearing Bradley's coach and another teacher argue about, I don't know, corporal punishment or like running laps as punishment. I don't know, something. But she's leaning against him. And he grabs her wrist and he realizes in a panic, like, oh, no, I'm touching her. I got to let her go. And she kind of like leaned her weight into him and he lets her go and she falls and lands on her wrist and breaks her wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Was that too slapstick for you?
Which to her was interpreted as like just another way that he's letting me down and
yeah.
projecting me and hurting me.
In her mind, it's like he pushed her down a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. On purpose.
I didn't find it too slapstick. I think if it had been adults, I would have.
Okay, got it. So she breaks her wrist and Bradley feels miserably guilty about it. So he offers.
I love a groveling boy.
Yeah. He offers to drive her around to wherever she needs to go. Because he doesn't want her on the bus with her wrist and like all her bags and just inconvenience. So he drives her to the presentation about the program that she wants
yeah.
to be in. And
yeah,
he suddenly,
whatever.
Yeah, the Explorer program. And he is very interested. He also wants to go into law, except not really. It's what his parents want him to go into.
Yeah.
He wants to be a science fiction writer.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, a full scholarship would be amazing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So he decides that he's going to go out for this program, and Celine is furious about it.
Sure.
So,
because really, how dare he?
Really, the bulk of the book is them going through this program and then being back at school in between and going from navigating their hatred asterisk of each other and then airing out how they felt about their big friendship breakup, trying to be more civil to each other, then realizing like they really do want to try to be friends again, to around the time that the second survival course was going to start, realizing like it'd be really fun if we made out sometimes.
Yeah, I think that is exactly what it's like. Once they kind of get over the grudges that they had been holding and they are friends again, it's like, oh shit, like we really enjoy each other's company. And now we've gone through puberty. So,
yeah.
So we should probably rub our mouths together.
Yeah. You get the sense that they're picking up where they left off, where the relationship would have progressed if they hadn't stopped being friends.
Right.
So on the last survival course outing, Celine can't deal with her feelings and she misinterprets Bradley wanting to talk, really to tell her like how he feels with him being about to break up with her, even though they're not together. And she does not want to be left first. Sure. So she tells him that they should stop seeing each other. Bradley is devastated. And their argument in the woods leads to him taking a tumble and cracking his ribs. And he has to leave the program early. And the whole thing makes Celine realize that she was really fucking stupid. And there is a finally confession of their feelings to each other. And at the awards presentation, Celine finds out from Catherine that she's not going to be one of the Golden Explorers. She's not going to get the scholarship, but Catherine was very impressed by her and would like her to be her intern. And she's like, I know that you're more of a corporate law person. And by now, Celine has realized that she's really not. She just like had built her whole life around getting back at her dad. And that's a pretty miserable way to exist. So now she's thinking about what she actually wants to do. And she gratefully accepts the internship. And then to Bradley's surprise, he is one of the scholarship winners because they decided that they were only going to look at his scores from the amount of time that he was able to participate before the tumble. And they were really high. So she gets an internship. He gets a full scholarship. And he's already told his parents that he's decided not to study law because he wants to study English and pursue a writing career. And they have a big kiss in front of everyone at the awards program. And they are very happy and finally together and finally not afraid to be honest about their feelings and open with other people who they've told this whole time that they hate each other. And at one point, Bradley even told people that she was his cousin.
Good job, Liz.
Yeah. Yay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Do you think they stay together forever?
Okay. I have a hard time looking at this only in the text and not at life experience. I have several friends who married their high school sweethearts. Couldn't be me. My high school sweetheart was
not a sweetheart.
Was not the match for me.
Sure.
Definitely good. We did not get married. And we could not stay together when I went to college, but it was, we were also on very different life trajectories. So that might have been a part of it. If we had been on, let's not say if we had been, let's just say that if you and your high school sweetheart, you're on similar trajectories, you're close enough distance wise to visit regularly. I think it's definitely harder to do a long distance college relationship when you're on different coasts. Like if you're in the United States, I'm very skeptical and pessimistic about one, relationships that started in high school
Yeah.
Continuing forever, and two, whether they should, because you evolve into a different person. But at the same time, I was a child bride. I may not have married my high school sweetheart, but I married my college sweetheart right after college graduation. And plenty of people told us, like, oh, getting married in your 20s is like a really bad idea, and it's not going to work out in the divorce rate, and don't you want to fuck other people, blah, blah, blah. But it clearly worked out, not without its struggles like any relationship. So I don't, this is a really long way of saying that I don't want to make an edict about relationships that start young in general. This one specifically, I think they'll work out. Yeah.
That's nice.
I'll say that they'll work out because I feel like so much of their growth has to do with each other.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're kind of planning their futures together at this point.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I like what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I also tend to be like, nah, it's not gonna last.
Yeah.
Just because of how old they are. Maybe that's just because I'm becoming aged myself. It's true. They are making plans. And I do think that their personalities really complement each other. Like, he kind of helps mellow out her intensity, and then vice versa. I want them to.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, oh, they're so young. They haven't even gone to college. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I changed a lot as a person during my college career. So I feel like that could be the case for them too, but who knows?
You can also change and evolve with the other person.
That's true.
I think my relationship is a sign of that. But again, it's really hard to make generalizations and to like, a romance novel really is a snapshot of a relationship. Mm-hmm. So based on this snapshot, I'm optimistic, but there is a lot going against them. And Celine, definitely, like, it's a good thing that she is looking to therapy because she is on some bullshit for a lot of this book.
So you're pretty clear that she's the worst half.
Yeah, I think that she is the instigator in most of their ongoing conflict. I think that she more actively wishes harm on Bradley than he does on her. His responses are like, when he attacks her, it's always flirty. Like, it's always like, this is a thing we do. It feels less like he has genuine rancor toward her than it feels like she does.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm always going to pick the character who's already in therapy and dealing with their shit as the better half than the one who hasn't gone yet, because Celine is just now starting to figure out some pretty obvious things about how her daddy issues have messed her. Saying daddy issues is reductive. I want to take that phrase out of my vocabulary, but she has ambitions that are not rooted in her actual desires.
Right. I will say, though, that in Bradley's case, he has support and resources that Celine lacks. So it makes sense that he would be able to be more mature and be in therapy when in Celine's situation, she underwent this very traumatic experience, and her mom has to do a lot of hours to try to support them. And so money is an issue. So I understand where she's coming from a lot of the time. Like, I would be prickly also. But I mean, yeah. I mean, if you look at just what's happening in the book, it's she's a little immature. Especially
but
she is
in high school.
She is in high school. I just, the whole I think he is maybe breaking up with me, even though we're not together. I better dump him first, based on a story that she's telling herself in her own brain, not anything that Bradley really did. And then it just utterly devastates him, and she doesn't like immediately take it back. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah,
she can see that she fucked up in that moment, mm-hmm. and doesn't go with transparency. And I don't blame her for that, because she's been hurt in such a deep way by the betrayal of her dad.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Yeah, I think you're right about the worst half, but I just wanted to show a little Celine compassion.
And we should show her compassion. One of the things that I loved about this book is something that Talia Hibbert in general does really well, is writing quirky female characters without falling into the not like other girls trap. I think mm-hmm. Celine is very much like, I'm not like other people.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And she has a moment in here that's very reminiscent of Jughead's speech in Riverdale. Like, I'm weird. I'm a weirdo. Like, when have you ever seen me without this hat? That's weird.
Excellent reference.
Yeah. So she does wear her weirdness like armor and like a badge of honor, but mm-hmm. not in a way that it's like, there's never any girl hate in this. There's only like girl admiration. There's only like
true.
Women who she looks up to, women who she wants to be friends with. But she does 100% think that she is better than mm-hmm. most of the people around her.
Yeah.
And when she is perceived as being helpful to other people and being a leader, she's like, really? I was just bored and they were taking too long to do it. So I was like, let me do it myself. Yeah.
Yeah. But I would prefer that from her, that like, oh, I was just bored and doing it, versus her being more like, yeah, I was trying to get extra points, mm-hmm. you know, like I prefer that sort of it more innocent like approach.
Yeah. She's much nicer than she thinks she is.
Yeah, exactly. And I also really love that about Bradley, is that he's like, he's good looking, he's good at sports, he's smart, he's popular, and he has this like struggle with a mental illness, but he's like never mean really to anybody, mm-hmm. and he doesn't seem to like hold with this like social hierarchy as intensely. And his I think his fault in this is supposed to be that he like tolerates some shitty friends,
mm-hmm.
But you know, even in the course of the book, once he like realizes that they're shitty, he changes that.
Yeah,
so we love Bradley.
We do love Bradley. He's a good boy.
He's a good boy. Who's a good boy?
So,
does have a little bit of golden retriever energy, which he I does. Like.
He definitely does. Like her breaking her wrist, he is like, I will do whatever you ask.
I'm sorry.
Like he thinks like, oh no, I've killed her. She's dead.
Do you have any particular scenes or moments that you really loved?
I really loved when Celine punches him in one arm. And then she has the urge and isn't sure whether to do it or not to punch him in the other arm to even out the sensations, because that's one of his OCD things. And he realizes what she's doing and he tells her, like, you don't have to do that anymore. But he's very touched by the fact that she remembers that and that she's willing to do that, even though what she's doing is literally punching him in one arm. She's like, oh, I need to punch him in the other arm so he feels okay.
Yeah.
That's so
tender. Yeah. And that's where she's showing that, like, even though she's prickly, she's really like caring for him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't remember the details of when they first like decide they're gonna kiss. Do you remember this?
I think it's in his room.
Okay.
Why are they hanging out at this particular moment? I'm not sure, because so many of their hangouts in this book, they like are meant to be like on purpose. Like, they don't want to just hang out to hang out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They're like sort of wrestling-ish or something.
That always leads to trouble.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's like, he just comes out and says it, which I think is so great.
Yeah.
And she's like totally gobsmacked.
That's very me in high school coded.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
Me in high school and me in college. Like, if I wanted someone to kiss me and it wasn't happening, I would just be like, you should kiss me, I think.
I think.
Yeah. Are you going to kiss me?
I did say that to someone I dated in college. I was like, when are you going to kiss me? Like, yeah. Come on, the clock's
yeah, ticking. I very much said that to my husband.
And it paid off.
It did. And now I'm pregnant. I don't cook, I don't clean, but let me tell you how I got this ring.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think what we have left is honorable sizzle in our fan casting.
Yes. Do you have an honorable sizzle?
Who am I meant to have? Do you know who the next book is supposed to be about, or is this a one-off?
I am not sure if this is a one-off or not. Time to look it up.
I am interested in her BFF.
Minerva?
Yeah, yeah. And I loved when, I think it's Bradley's friend Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that he's an American.
Mm-hmm.
He gives good energy, and then he was like low-key obsessed with Minerva, and then when he found out that she is gay, it like just transformed into admiration. I'm like, I love that so much.
Yeah,
so really either of them I'd like to see more from.
So on Goodreads, this is not listed as part of a series.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking at that page too,
so I'm not sure that it will be. But if it were, I would really like to see more of Aurora, the very shy explorer who is a secret Scorpio, which very much surprises Celine, who is a Capricorn. So Capricorns and Scorpios are both pretty prickly zodiac signs, and Scorpios are dark and mysterious and have all these depths and secrets and know other people's secrets, can uncover other people's secrets. So Aurora, when Celine first meets her, she is very unsure of her name, because when she introduces herself, it's like, and Celine is like, I don't think I caught that. Do I ask her to say it again? Was it Roro? Was it Roro? And then she finally says, my name is Aurora, like Sleeping Beauty.
And they're roommates, right? Like, yes. Bunkmates, cabin mates.
Yeah. And she's so perceptive and kind. And the fact that she's a Scorpio and has these hidden depths, I would love to know what those are, because they'd probably be fascinating. So yeah. She's my honorable sizzle.
Love it. Okay, so that just leaves fan casting, I believe.
Yeah.
I heard you're going to have to incorporate a time machine into yours.
Yeah, do you have yours at the ready?
I do, and I can't say that I've, like, super well researched them, but so this is really just based on looks. Okay, so there's this actor, his name is Malik Thompson Dwyer.
Okay.
25, which I feel like is the usual age of actors playing high schoolers.
Oh, he's so cute.
I know, right? And I was really kind of looking at the cover art, which I really loved for this book. So yeah, I thought that would be a good fit for Bradley. And then I also need a time machine. So for Celine, I want British influencer Stephanie Yeboah.
Okay.
I can send you the link to her Instagram. She's like a body positivity influencer, and she does a lot of like makeup and clothing reviews, and she's talked about living with dissociative identity disorder. She would need a time machine because she's in her early 30s, but
I don't know.
She's gorgeous. Just,
yeah, she's gorgeous. She has a lot of personality, which I feel like Celine does too. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it would be a good fit.
I feel like Celine would very much like her wardrobe.
Definitely. Definitely.
So with your pick for Bradley being 25, I might not need a time machine for mine, but I was saying time machine because ideally I would like to cast someone a little younger for Celine, but I also wasn't able to find an actress for Celine whose work I'm familiar with. So for me, I chose 27-year-old Shameik Moore, who is the voice of Miles Morales in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay.
So
looking him up. Oh, cute.
Yes. He is fine. And I feel his like
jawline. My yeah, God.
I feel like he perfectly captured that sense of competence, but not yet realizing it, of being unsure of what it is that you really want and how to go after it. A lot of the same themes that Bradley deals with in this book, he portrayed beautifully as a vocal performance and Into the Spider-Verse. So that is who I would pick. And then there are plenty of actresses who are a visual match whose work I'm not familiar with, like Amber Riley, who I didn't watch Glee.
Yeah.
So the person whose personality, who I feel like is IRL Celine, is Monica Strange, probably not her real last name, from Probs in a UFO on TikTok. She's the one who did the recurring series of explaining Twilight to the aliens who abducted her.
I love those videos.
And she does all sorts of conspiracy theory, deep dives, existential crisis, theorizing, like, what if there is a whole civilization inside the Earth? What if there are actual UFOs out there? What she's so lighthearted about it and so genuinely excited and curious that it doesn't give you like flat earther vibes, which I think like conspiracy theorists usually like go in that direction.
Yeah,
she's just like, this is fascinating, and like there's enough out there that like I want to believe.
This is a perfect fit.
Yes, she feels so much like Celine to me, and that's who I kept imagining.
Yeah,
throughout this book. So someone who can capture Monica would be a good Celine.
How long have you been following her?
Since I've been on TikTok, I think. So a couple of years now.
So you're also a consumer of conspiracy theory content?
Accidentally, I guess. But she started out with the Twilight alien videos, and that's why I follow her. So now I think the only conspiracy theories that I see are from her.
Okay. Do you have a favorite, like a pet conspiracy theory?
I don't know of her specifically, but.
No, just you in general.
Yeah, me in general. I do think that aliens are out there and that the government knows about them. And the shit that was happening a few weeks ago with all the UFOs being struck down did legitimately scare me. Are we about to be invaded? But I truly like keep going back to Ice Planet Barbarians.
We're a classy planet. They don't want to mess with us.
Any civilization advanced enough to travel through space to get to us is not going to want to fuck with us. They might take a peek.
What would we even have that they would want?
Not a thing. Not a thing.
We're already depleting what little resources we have.
We wouldn't even be good as like labor. No. You know?
Yeah.
We wouldn't be good as sex slaves.
No.
Because Republicans don't want us to know anything about sex, and they're banning romance novels from public libraries for adults and anything that mentions the word gender or the idea of gender for kids. So I don't know. We're just, I wouldn't fuck with us if I were aliens. So
yeah.
So that's just me. There's other like lost civilization things that while they appeal to me, I know too much about like the anti-Semitic roots of them to not even want to explore them from a fun perspective. My favorite like rabbit hole to sort of gawk at is star seeds, which again, like,
what's that?
Okay. So in New Age spirituality, there is this idea that there are all these other alien civilizations that did come to Earth to try to make things better, to elevate humans. And there are different varieties, like Lemurians and reptilian. So then you get into lizard people, which is a whole anti-Semitic thing. So very quickly this devolves into anti-Semitism and into, oh, we are I am from a higher class of being, and I am enlightened, and I was dropped off in Earth without my memories, but I have a mission to awaken to my true self and then awaken these other people.
And like a cult.
Yeah, and then New Age people love to be like, I'm a star seed and I came from this planet, and these are what kind of star seed are you, and this is how you can tell. And inevitably all those people start following alt-right conservatives on Twitter and talking about how oat milk is a psyop. So
what's a psyop?
A psychological operation. I don't fucking know, Meg. Just to show that, like, you can tell people, like, drink this and they'll be like, okay. I don't know. Wow. It's bonkers. So if you want to go down a rabbit hole, that's, I wouldn't say a good one, but it is one.
I always feel like I have like a pretty decent grasp on the world around me. And then we start talking about things that you have learned from social media, and I realize that I don't know shit about fuck.
I'm going to save this article. I'll read through it. And if it's a pretty comprehensive view, I'll include it in the show notes, or I'll find something else. But the headline is The Dark Historical Roots of Star Seeds.
This is so fucking weird.
And I'll drop it in the chat if you want to take a look at it. But the main photo is like there's a illustration of like a very Aryan looking alien man next to the QAnon shaman. So,
oh, Jesus God. I was interested in lizard people from like a monster fucker perspective until
you informed me. And then you find out.
Anti-Semitic.
Yeah. It's, wow. There's a lot of things that sound interesting at first, and then you like scratch the surface barely and find out that it's a pile of dog shit.
Ew, this Aryan alien, I hate it. How can I describe it? Has the hairline and hair of what's his name? He's Mr. Smith in The Matrix.
Yeah. It's very long.
Okay. Hugo Weaving. All right. This is really roundabout. If you look up Hugo Weaving in Lord of the Rings.
Oh yes, that's exactly who this looks like. But blonde. I just rewatched blonde. The Lord of the Rings a couple of weeks ago because Eric was like, let's watch this. I haven't watched it in years. And I was just struck by, God damn, this is a long movie. But yeah, that's exactly who this looks like.
Yeah, with like pervert Barbie doll eyes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The whole starseed thing is also similar to the idea of indigo children. children who are just like special and unique. And honestly, I think I might be wrong about this, but I think that Indigo Children is just a way for people to, that one of the things about it is a way for people to explain away their child's autism instead of like accepting like, oh, my child just has a neurodivergence that is not that uncommon, and
yeah,
I can provide the resources for them to manage the parts of it that make their life difficult, if any. So I think there's just a lot. There's just, yeah. This is why I don't fuck with conspiracy theories. I do think that there are aliens out there, but everything else, it's just like, let me not.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'm glad I don't.
Okay,
I don't know,
so you don't have a pet one. You have...
No, I mean, not that I truly believe, and not that I've learned from anyone else, but like I have a sort of joking theory. I'm seeing a drawing now of a lizard person, and I really fucking hate it. Sorry, I need to stop scrolling through this article. I have a theory that hell is a series of connecting flights that never ends. Like, you're just stuck in airports, and it's like the worst. I feel like airports bring out a bad side of people because it's like it's no one's home or community, so nobody takes any like sense of responsibility for it, so people just treat it like shit and they like leave shit everywhere, and so yeah, that's my theory.
Yeah.
But it's not a conspiracy, it's just a theory.
So the one bit of Mormon ideology that I could still fuck with, because this feels very likely to me, is that Mormons don't, for all my like doom and gloom and like religious guilt, Mormons don't actually have a concept of hell, like fire and brimstone hell. It's more like hell is like we're there. Like hell would just be this existence.
And you're like, yeah, that makes
sense. That makes so much sense to me. So, okay. Well, yeah. I have my mini Rider-Waite tarot deck out because they are children and they are small.
Yay.
So I'm just going to pull some cards for them.
They're like, aren't they like 18?
They are babies. They are tiny, tiny children. So I'm going to pull a card for each of their careers 10 years from the events of the book, and a card for their relationship 10 years from the end of the book. So let's see if this deck thinks that they're together and happily together. So for Celine,
so they're approaching 30 at this point.
Yes. So for Celine, the card that jumped out for her career is the Emperor. So that feels to me like she's definitely at the top of her game and meeting her goals.
Right.
In a position of leadership or power, in a position of being able to enact change. For Bradley, Temperance. So I'm going to say that Bradley's making it as a writer. But I don't think that his perspective of like thinking of writing as like, well, most books only sell a few hundred copies and like it's impossible to make it as a full-time writer. I don't think that Bradley is going to be trying to make it as a full-time writer 10 years from now. I think he's going to have a day job. Bradley's perspective about writing and his anxiety about writing is much like mine was at that age. And my advice to him would be like, work a day job. It's fine. It doesn't make you a failure. You can do both. A lot of people do both. Don't like aspire to be a full-time writer right away or ever. It doesn't negate being a writer and doing the thing. So that's a bit of advice from an elder for Bradley. And then for their relationship, the Two of Cups, they're still happy. They still have a partnership with mutual understanding as equals. So good for them.
Yeah.
I think that they're in a good spot. I think that they're making good choices about their lives. So that's an optimistic reading of 10 years from now.
Wait, did we even talk about the fact that Bradley is a bisexual king?
Okay, I wasn't sure if I was picking it up correctly, but you got that too, that he's talked about.
Yeah.
Was there an overt, like, I'm bisexual, or just...
I thought it was discussed that he had, like, sort of dated someone okay. in there. Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, bisexual King Bradley. I love that.
Him. Love him so much. Precious baby angel.
He's so great.
Yeah.
Do you have a recipe or anything that captures the flavor of this book?
No, I don't. I can tell you what I'm drinking right now. It's very boring.
Sure.
It's a plain, or what's it called? Pure flavor LaCroix, which is just water.
Sparkling so it's water. Like Perrier?
Yeah, it's just sparkling water, club soda. And then some, it's like coconut flavoring, like flavor syrup.
Okay.
And so it's just like a coconut soda, basically.
That sounds refreshing.
It is. You know, I'm doing a dry month here. So
maybe you could drop in a cupcake recipe for Aurora's birthday cupcakes.
Okay.
Or just here's what you can do. You can go to your local grocery store and you can get a box of cake mix and you can make cupcakes. Or you can buy grocery store cupcakes,
which are also made. Pretty good.
And then
in Costco in your area, fucking get a sheet cake from there. That shit is fire. Have you ever had a Costco cake?
I don't know. I don't think I have.
Oh man, it is. That's what's up. I aspire.
Unless that's what
to
someone
that.
Has brought to the office at some point. So
I like it because the frosting is not super duper sweet.
I don't feel like anyone, and this is my fault. I was trying to make a Polaroid photo of it happen. I should have also taken a phone photo of it, but I was overstimulated at my baby shower. All the cakes that Meg made that I then had to throw out because of the storm that knocked the power out for 3 days. But
yeah, I figured that would happen.
Which is part of why we didn't record last week. But these cakes were so beautiful. The only other photo I have looks like it was shot on a potato.
Yeah, it really does.
I hope Deanna isn't listening, but like, how did, like, I feel like you had to try to get that bad of a photo.
Yeah, like maybe she was like moving a little bit.
Yeah, I was like, wow, dude. Yeah, but oh, they were so good.
Yeah, we had a buttermilk red velvet cake. Delish. Cream cheese frosting. We had a chocolate, a single layer cake with a chocolate cream cheese frosting.
Amazing.
And then we had a funfetti cake, multiple layers. It was a tall boy, and it had an ermine frosting, which is a cooked flour frosting. It like makes a really silky mouthfeel without being super duper sugary. Because I
Ooh,
feel like
mouthfeel.
I'm anti American buttercream, which is what you classically get on cakes here. In it from the store because it's a little crunchy, even though they use powdered sugar, you can kind of like get a little crystally crunch when you're eating it, and it's just way too sugary.
Huh, I don't have the palate to notice that.
Mm.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, the funfetti one was my favorite. It did ruin my life a little bit because it was so good, and also because my house was just covered in sprinkles every time that we tried to slice it. It just was an explosion of sprinkles.
There were sprinkles on all three of those cakes, and there's a lot of sprinkles. And then we had macarons that were lavender lemon. With a lemon filling. Yeah.
And then you left us a big one, like
a gigantic one.
A gigantic
one. A grand macaron.
A grand macaron. And we ate most of that one before the power went out. And all of the leftover normal size ones. So
the normies.
The normies. Well, thank you so much for listening. If you have made it this far, we will have all of our links in the show notes. My book has been out for a month by the time that you are listening to it. So thank you to everyone who has read it and left reviews. And you can still get it. I will still keep including the link in the show notes. The proceeds, the royalties, will probably just go to my child. So
yeah, you're supporting the future.
You're supporting the future. I'm gonna raise like a little socialist feminist activist. So like, invest in the future.
Until you know what we should do?
What should we do?
For an episode or even just a short one is to go through and talk about the books that you have been given or bought for your child so far.
That would be so fun. There was one called The Little Coven that our friend Sarah, who's been on the podcast a few times, got us. I think it was Sarah, right?
Yeah.
And it was so, the cover was so cute that I just started reading it out loud, did a story time.
Yeah, we were insisting. We were like, do story time.
And everyone was crying at the end of it.
I was like, I'm weeping in a party full of people I don't know.
My friend Brittany got us one called Link Sets Boundaries, and Meg was like, Jimmy, I want to look at that.
I need this for present day.
Yes. So that would be fun. We could do a mini episode. Yeah,
we should do that.
Okay. So until next time, air kisses.